Hi, it's Steven to Good Sport Law. Leave me a message. I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
Hey, Steve. It's Dina. You aren't going to believe what just came across my desk. We need to chat. Give me a call.
Welcome to the latest episode of Sportopia. We're so excited to share our knowledge and have conversations about healthy human sport. This episode, we're going to be talking about current leadership crisis, or maybe we're going to call it something else, like there's an opportunity here, like maybe it's crisis interrupted. So Steve, I'm really curious. How are you doing, bud?
I am well. I think, to be honest, Dean, I know I had a breakthrough in the last time we recorded an episode of Sportopia when we started talking about crisis and the negativity in sport. And when you start looking at it like it's an opportunity, it changes the way we feel and think and consider things. So I'm really trying to keep that focus as we swim through the ever-changing landscape of sport these days, saying, yeah, you know, maybe things are different and things, the way we used to do things aren't acceptable anymore. But rather than seeing that as a weight, seeing it as an opportunity has really changed my mindset and actually made me feel better and feel excited for opportunities to make good change and significant change in the way we govern sport, we lead sport, rather than constantly trying to be reactive and putting out fires rather than, I was going to use an analogy of creating new fires, but that doesn't sound good. But of just creating new opportunities and again, changing the way we may have done things for the better. So I think it's exciting. It's been a real shift in mindset for me when the last couple years, if for months for sure, have been very heavy.
Yeah. Well, beautiful, Steve. Actually, as an integral coach, when I work with clients, and we shift the language. And because I remember the last time we talked on this podcast, you were like, whoa, I hadn't thought about it from that perspective. And so two things that I'll share with you, and then I'm going to dive into some of the, you know, what you believe are some of the more pressing legal issues that sport leaders need to really take a hard look at. The first is when we're in fight, flight, freeze, faint, it's really hard for us to see beyond the tyranny of the immediate. By reframing it from a crisis to, you know, an opportunity, or we're going to interrupt this language and this narrative around it, it gives our bodies an opportunity to pause and, you know, recalibrate and go, okay, I can catch my breath. And so I love that you're saying that. And what we would say is we're just normalizing a normal, needed, necessary transition. And you and I would say sport has needed to evolve its practices, its requirements for, you know, well over 20 years now. So we've been seeing this for a while. So that would be the first thing. And the other thing, maybe what I'd love to do in pigging off your analogy, let's create a bridge over these troubled waters, shall we? A little bit of Simon and Garfunkel.
Before you ask the question, Dean, I think you're going to ask, it was interesting. I just want to share a quick story. Just last week, I got a call on it. It's always on a Friday. And the individual was dealing with a safe sport issue. It had to do with some sexual innuendos. And the individual almost was in the verge of tears, just explaining to me what was happening. And just a summary of the allegations that were made against two athletes, one athlete against another athlete. And I said to the individual, I said, you kind of say it rhetorically, but it was interesting. He actually did it. I said, slow down and take a breath. And he did that. He stopped and I could hear him on the phone. I said, okay, good. You know, we're going to work through this together and I'm going to help you do that. And I'm going to help you manage this. And yes, you know, again, in the previous podcast, we've talked about the roles that sometimes coaches and leaders get put into that they may not be prepared for. I know even myself 20 years ago, it'll be about 20 years ago, I started doing this and you know, I got into sport naively. Oh, it'll be fun. It'll be cool. I'll get to go to all kinds of really cool events and see really cool people. And some of that's true, but to suggest that I would have said I'd be dealing with the things that I deal with now, no way I would have projected that. And I think the leaders in sport are starting to, you know, see that more so than not these days. So it was really interesting to remind people to slow down, take a breath. I'm not saying the management of a sexual assault case or sexual, you know, sexual related complaints is an opportunity, but we have to remember about ourselves, and taking that breath was huge.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that you've said that. That's a really great coaching move, by the way. It feels like some of my stuff is rubbing off on you.
Works both ways.
So, it works both ways. There you go. Well, a couple of things. So you inspired me. As you know, I'm an avid writer and study under world-leading poets. And something that you said really invited me to go and reach in my book of poetry here. There's a gorgeous, it's a tiny little poem by Carolyn Miskinak. And the title of the poem is Make Space for Storms. And she says, do not push away the things that hurt, make space for them. Allow them to breathe fearlessly in the same way an open sky inhales a storm. Yeah. So as we continue to have a conversation today, you know, in that moment when you were supporting someone who was obviously in fight, flight, freeze, faint, allowing them to pause, catch their breath, it's a human moment, right? This is basically what we're in right now. It's a human moment. And there's a lot of fear in the environment, a lot of uncertainty. And so I'm curious, Steve, you know, let's start with the big foundation. You know, you and I, we talk about sport law being, there's a leadership side to the house and a legal side to the house. And it's really hard for leaders to thrive when the leadership, when the legal side of the house is so uncertain, and that's where we're meeting the world right now. So from your perspective, what are some of the pressing legal opportunities that you see on the horizon?
Well, it would be remiss not to start, Dina, with the Safe Sport movement to talk about how that is an opportunity. You know, I would say, interesting enough, I've never thought it was a policy problem. In the 20 years that I've been working in sport, it's very rare, if ever, where the implementation of a policy was the problem. So I don't think it's necessarily about redrafting policies and updating policies, but it is about making sure that there are people with expertise to implement those policies. And don't get me wrong when I say that, you know, the new UCC version 5, version 6 that have come out over the last 3 to 4 years, yes, they've enhanced the way that we look at abuse and maltreatment by adding definitions related to grooming, neglect, you know, things along those lines. So for sure, there are pressing changes that have been made to help sport and provide clarity or more clarity, which leads, of course, to more education. So I really like that. But I really think the opportunity out there is to find your procedure and your people to manage your safe sport issues, whether it's the proactive side. So it's on the education, you know, is that somebody coming in, meeting one-on-one with athletes and coaches and decision makers and leaders? Is it an online training course? And then, of course, the reactive side is, what do you do when you get that call? Do you have your people in place who can manage that complaint or that issue in a quick way and have, you know, knowledge to be able to do it efficiently? And I think that's really an opportunity. Of course, it's an ever-changing landscape with the creation of OSIC, the Office of the Sport Integrity Commission, and deciding whether that's the right system for you, or again, whether it's something you can work with your PSO, your NSO. I can go forever, Dean, on this one topic. I also love the idea of pan-Canadian policies, having the same system in place within sport. And I don't think I've sworn, if that's a word, in this podcast yet. But in sport, I always like to say the shit rolls uphill. And what I mean by that, if there's a complaint at a local level and the club doesn't have the ability to manage it or just didn't manage it well, it's going to go up to the provincial territorial level and it may end up at the national level. And when we create pan-Canadian policies, we'll be able to establish expertise across the sector, across the sport, and the ability to move the issue up the ladder is a little bit smoother. And, you know, as I say, being a good person in BC is this should be the same as being a good person in PEI. So I don't know why we can't have that consistency to explore and elaborate the expertise. I was in New Brunswick just over the weekend and did a safe sport session and asked, I asked these questions rhetorically, but, you know, how many complaints have you had this year? And I want to draw a distinction between, and you and I will laugh about this, complaining and filing a complaint. And of course, we're looking more at those formal complaints where we establish a panel, there's document exchange and a decision rendered versus complaining can usually be resolved informally. And the number is usually low, under 10 across the country. And so we talk about sharing resources and does each province and club and territory and national body need their own independent third party and their own panel members and their own investigators and their own mediators? And the answer is no, they really should be able to share resources. So I really see that as an opportunity. I've got a whole bunch of more opportunities, Dina, but I'm going to take a breath and I'm sure you're going to want to respond to some of the stuff that I brought up.
Yeah, no, I was writing down all kinds of stuff. Every time we connect, it's like, oh, I hadn't thought about it from that perspective. So maybe a way to untangle it for, you know, our listeners is the stuff that I like to focus on is, you know, what ought we do? It's the moral imperative. It's where leadership, right? What's the leadership heart? What are the muscles that we need as leaders in any sector? What you speak to are all the things that we must do, right? That are codified and entrenched in legal doctrine or, you know, requirements. And what I'm thinking is, you know, you talked about system alignment and in the spirit of being proactive, I think we have to move beyond alignment to system integration. So I have big dreams of, you know, getting to simple. And you and I know that getting to simple requires a ton of hard work. Until we get to a simplicity where the national organization can actually not only loosely influence at best what happens on the field of play, you know, it's a bit of a pipe dream, right? For us to really ensure that the lived experience of the vast majority of participants are in communities across the country. And my high hope is that there's going to be system integration so that the little storefront, the club, has those same consistent values and leadership training and policies and procedures that we would expect at the national level. Because from where I sit, right, and I used to coach at the community level, and then I serve as an integral coach to Olympians and Paralympians and high level coaches. One of the things that I will see is maltreatment, you know, and kids' relationship with the experience of sport gets formed and their belief system around that gets formed on the field of play. So if we really want to see a seismic shift in how sport is being experienced, we have to do a much better job of ensuring that kids and communities are getting an experience that's really healthy. So that would be my first thing. The second thing that I'd love to normalize, Steve, because you deal, you know, with so many conversations, and you shared one example of it where this young man was calling you and you know, you had to help him catch a breath. As a coach, when I'm helping people deal with conflict, the way that I like to talk about conflict is in ecosystems, in relationships, you need that generative tension, right? That, and it's like you and I are friends and colleagues and partners because we don't see the world exactly the way the other one does, but we have this tension between us that you and I would say is healthy, right? The yin to each other's yang. And as a result, our company's thriving and our clients are thriving. Now, if we don't nourish that generative tension, if we stop talking to each other and stop listening to each other, then that relationship moves into dysfunction. And before you know it, we're in unnecessary conflict land. And this is where we need to do a better job of just having a mechanism where people can call you. This is what they do with me. They call me and say, they're complaining. They're complaining about each other or their relationship, or they're not sure. And as they feel witnessed and listened to, they can make better decisions. where the whole world of sport is in right now is on the far end of the scale, intentional maltreatment. And my one observation is, and what I'm mindful of is, if we superimpose all of these measures to deal with, you know, the unhealthy relationship or the relationship that's been left to sour, and we impose maltreatment focused measures, I think we're going to keep sports stuck. What we really need to do, as you just modeled, we need to take a breath. We need to be more human with each other and invest in, you know, quality relationships. When we do that, I think we're going to see a decrease in an unnecessary conflict.
Well, it's a good segue, Dina, to what I was thinking about talking about next was, you know, a little bit of reform or doing things differently. And two of those big topics I would talk about are, as you said, simplicity and amalgamation. I don't do a ton of them, but I definitely have done my share of amalgamations, but more so at the club level, a little bit at the regional level. But you and I have talked about this before, about the number of decision makers that there are in sport and to simplify that. And I always find it a bit mind-boggling when not-for-profits kind of butt heads with not-for-profits. You know, we're all trying to share the same piece of the pie. And if, you know, would you rather have two small pieces of apple pie or one big one? And I think we all know we'd rather have the big one. So I really like that as something, as an opportunity for sport to look at, is potential amalgamations, eliminating the number of decision makers, and also moving away from what I would think is old school thinking of that we have to bring people in as decision makers, as directors, in order to get them to volunteer. And, you know, I've always preached that we should try and put people into positions of strength rather than, you know, a position that we think is going to get them to into a spot where they can help us. And I've always said this even publicly, and I'll say it again here. I think being a board member is boring, because what you should be talking about is audits and financial planning and budgets and strat plans and oversight, and not necessarily, you know, who's going to win provincials or nationals. Or
hey, I like that kind of stuff. Does that make me boring?
Some people are very special. I again spoke about it last weekend. Dina said it publicly and someone put his hand up. He said, I love governance. I said, well, you and I could have a beer later and chat about it. But I think 99% of the room is yeah. more interested in, you know, the on-field decisions or, you know, or decisions. So I really think I'd like to see a little bit more work and intentional recruitment of people into skill sets to make them thrive, and not using the board as a place to recruit volunteers, but putting people on the board who have the skill set and desire to be on the board. And I always tell this story when we talk about governance. I was at a PSO AGM and this individual stood up and he said, you know, I'm the managing director of a very large law firm in Canada. And I think I have the resources to be able to help this organization. And I was like, yes, you're great. I love you. Oh my gosh, put him on the board. And the election occurred and he didn't get in. And I elbowed the executive director. I said, really, why wouldn't they have selected him? And the response was, well, he doesn't know sport. He doesn't know basketball. He doesn't know volleyball. He doesn't know swimming. That was the example given to me. And I've always kind of thought, well, aren't there enough people who know basketball, volleyball, and swimming? And we need more people who know how to be a board member, how to be a director. So I really see that opportunity out there. And it's hard. I get it. And I recognize that sometimes, Dina, you and I throw rocks at glass houses, because I always say it's easier to tell you what to do than it is to do it. But if you take the time to find the right people, it will really pay off. I just spoke to an ED the other day. I said, how much time do you put into managing your board? 95%, Dina. 95% of my time goes into managing my board. What? Yeah. What?
Yeah. Yeah, the times, they are changing. So, you know, we're talking about people now, right? And we're really talking about, so beyond the legal, some of the legal things that are both opportunities and some of the challenges, my sense is, you know, we're as sport is modernizing, as we are moving through this transition, as the system and structures that underpins a system that lives inside a world ecosystem, because that's changing too. Our over-reliance on a volunteer population needs to be addressed, because you and I know, and I've said it on this podcast before, the next generation, which I do a lot of work with, does not want to volunteer the way the current one does. So if we're going to try and deal with complex, you know, situations, and one of the terms I'll share here is we live in a VUCA world. So what does VUCA stand for? It's volatile, it's uncertain, it's complex, and it's ambiguous. So if every one of us needs to catch a breath, to your earlier point, Steve, the people inside the ecosystem, as the system starts to modernize, I think we're going to see more professionals, right? More competency-based people that actually want to lead inside the ecosystem. And I was just on a call with a group of female leaders that I'm supporting, and we started to talk about that a little bit. We were noticing the difference in the language, like, I have to do this and I need to do that. And I asked the question, what happens when you actually replace need and have to with I choose to? I'm choosing to stay in. So an invitation for all of our listeners is, what do you need? If you're choosing to stay in, what do you need as a leader? Well, you need vastly different kind of leadership development skills and training than what got you in here. So this overall message of what got you here isn't what we need to get us to where we want to go, I think would be the first thing. The second thing is, you know, sport has been privileged male and white since the beginning of its kind of structure in Canada in the 1970s, right? So as we start to increase, you know, this hope and opportunity to bring in more people of color and indigenous, you know, communities and more leadership opportunities for women, one of the other principles that we can check against is the leadership reflecting the people we're here to serve? And if it's not, then we have a ton of work to do. So that would be the second thing. You know, the third thing I would say is we need to measure whether or not our ecosystem, our cultures are actually thriving. So if we're not measuring how well our culture is performing, we are exposing ourselves to all kinds of unnecessary risks. And I know this to be true because I'm accompanying about 6 sport organizations now. This is novel work, right? This is the Sport Culture Index that Sport Law has partnered with InnerLogic on. And the big reveal, you know, when I share with people their 12 domains of culture, and I give them a sense of what their culture looks like, and they have a report card, you know, all of them, Steve, are saying, this isn't surprising me. So what's keeping them up at night is not what they think is out there, because they already know. But when they don't have the measurements, when we don't communicate what it is that we're seeing, then people aren't getting the feedback loop. And so the only resort left for a lot of these people is to complain, put a complaint in. Yeah. And that makes me sad. So I think, you know, we need very brave leaders now who are going to say, I'm choosing to stay in. Here's what that looks like. And they need to demand more leadership development to be able to resource them. So we're not posing more risks on very tired people.
You know, where my mind's going, Dina, is, you know, how many times are we going to have to do this? So if we're going to do a cultural review, pick a sport, doesn't matter, 30 clubs, 40 clubs, 600 clubs, 12 PTOs, 13 PTOs. If we had the ability to, I know amalgamate's the legal term, but work together, we might only have to do things once.
Yeah, imagine that.
Right. Instead of, like I said, 13 culture reviews, we could do one. And instead of trying to, you know, share the 10 skilled board members amongst 10 organization, what if there was one?
Right.
And it's always interesting, the hurdles that come forward. I recently worked on an amalgamation between 2 clubs that would have made them a very large club. And we did all the work. We did the financial review. We did the new bylaws. We did the new board composition. We did all the paperwork. We were ready to file. And the last thing to have it ratified was the members had to approve it. But it didn't even get to that point because the 2 boards of the clubs couldn't agree who the executive director was going to be. Was it your club or my club? And I'm always an optimistic to think that we can work those things out and find, you know, again, where do people want to work and what is it, a CFO and a CEO and a COO or whatever C, you know, acronym you want to come up with, I'm sure we can make a way for it to work. But the more we talk about these things and the change or the opportunities, it would be really nice to do it once instead of over and over again. And yeah. I recognize sport is going to have its different silos, but I still believe we can minimize the number of entities in the silo.
Yeah. You know what I love about what you just shared? Less is more. You know, we have, and wait for it, folks, over 34,000 sport organizations. The vast majority are in communities. And instead of opening up another storefront to even evaluate whether or not it makes sense, you know, we're not happy with the club over here, so we're going to create our own club, right? I'm, of course, maybe digressing a little bit, but I love this idea of how do we start to work better together? How do we put people inside their zones of genius, right? Not everybody is built to be a 21st century director. How do we allow people who want to volunteer in sport to, and the next generation is kind of teaching us, right? They want to be more project specific. So they'll come in and work on an event or they'll work on a project, but they don't want to serve as fiduciaries of the organization. So I think that's really important that you said, Steve. And I love what you said, you know, noticing that when we got down to the wire, and we're seeing this right now in the sport ecosystem, organizations that would make sense to join forces are being polarized because who's going to be on top? And what I would say is, you know, as a grief and loss companion and coach, you know, we have this attachment to forever. At some point, you know, everything comes to an end. And so if we can ask ourselves, you know, what is the mission of the organization? Did it serve its purpose? None of us are going to be here for a finite, you know, into perpetuity. And those people, by the way, Steve, that designed the ecosystem of sport, you know, more modern day sport as we know it, back in the 70s, they never said that this ecosystem, these systems and structures needed to last forever. But because sport is so beholden to a volunteer structure, right, we don't have the staying power of people to actually acknowledge that the ways in which we're constructed and designed are well past their best before date. So my high hope is that, you know, people can just acknowledge we are in transition. Transition is normal, necessary, needed. Can we be a little bit kinder? You know, talk about survival of the fittest, Steve. I think we need to reward survival of the kindest, right? We can't keep fighting at each other and playing the blame game. So my hope, you know, as we start to move towards 2020, you know, 3, 24, 25, we put in place these restorative practices. We manage by values, we reward people for, you know, checking out their culture. And we're transparent in how we deal with this so that people aren't thinking that we're protecting, you know, bad behavior. That's on my wish list.
Well, to build on that, Dina, I was thinking about during COVID. So I remember March 13th, you know, the world shut down, sports shut down, and I had a very quick panic attack and went, no sport, no job. And what does that look like? And interesting enough, it was probably the busiest time that we've had in over a decade, and there was no people playing sport. But what I loved about what organizations did was they took that opportunity to look at the things they usually, quote, quote, don't have time for. Strategic plans, budget, nominations, board committees, operational reviews, staffing reviews, you know, to take a look at, are we doing things the way we want to be doing them? And I do worry that now that we're back playing and that we get caught up in the administration of playing and we forget about, you know, creating the foundation of the organization. So I hope people will look at some of the things we're talking about here today, even when they're super busy running events and making sure coaches are being screened and certified and all the other things that keep us busy. But I really hope that we don't get lost those opportunities that sometimes, yes, they're not so glamorous. But one of our founding partners, I believe, used to say is making a good organization great. And that's my wish too, Dina. So
I love that. That's probably a really beautiful way for us to end. You know, how do we take people from good to great? The fine, you know, the famous words by a researcher, Jim Collins. So I'll meet you there. You know, I'm really excited, actually, Steve. It's hard to bear witness to people's suffering, and you and I are seeing so much of that right now. Really well-intentioned people and good people are, I think, really struggling in this moment. And so hopefully, you know, in these podcasts, they learn something new. Maybe they feel a little less isolated, and hopefully it recharges their batteries so that they walk away, you know, not realizing I can't do everything, but maybe I can make a commitment to do one thing. And so hopefully that makes them feel a little bit better than they did before they listened to us. So always a pleasure connecting with you, Steve.
You too. We'll talk to you later.
To learn more about leadership opportunities in sport, check out our blogs, which will be linked in the episode notes. Beyond Binary Worldviews, The Expendables, and Leaders as Meaningful Catalysts to Change. Thank you for listening. We look forward to not only sharing our vision of Sportopia, but also collaborating with our community to elevate sport.
To have your say in Sportopia, email us at hello@sportlaw.ca or on social media @sportlawca to let us know what you want to hear about next. Our next episode will be on the opportunity for sport system integration in Canada. Stay tuned for that episode.